Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is AppSats Radio, help for partners after sexual betrayal. We talk about it here.
Betrayal trauma.
We are AppSats certified clinical partner specialists and coaches who have been trained to help navigate you through this crisis. There is nothing we won't talk about.
Sometimes listeners want to know about triggers.
I'm dealing with the aftermath of my husband's affairs, and he still works the same job that he did when he was acting out. It's a job that allows him to hide his goings-on and one that he stated was the previous trigger for his acting out. The whole 16 and a half years we've been together, he's acted out. In the beginning, what I thought it was just pornography. It ended up being, I found out 2.5 years ago, he had been with multiple prostitutes. I only found out a very small portion of that until about a month ago. How do you cope with all of that when you still have to deal with unavoidable triggers?
Well, of course you would feel traumatized by hearing all that information. And I got to tell you, Stephanie, that's a staggered disclosure. That's finding out little bits and pieces about your husband's behavior throughout a time period, making you feel insecure, unsure, and unsafe. So what we got to do is set up a situation whereby you get with a specialist to do a formal disclosure so you can hear everything at one time in a safe environment.
You know, it's so important to know what to expect when you are living with a sex addict, no matter what the recovery. Hi, I'm Carol Jurgensen Sheets, a.k.a. Carol the Coach, and I'm so glad to be with you today. It's really, really rough, I might add, for somebody to have been in this situation and to oftentimes wonder what the next step is. I mean, I just had a woman in here today, and she said, we've been separated 3 times, and he's gone now, and I hate him, but I love him. I want him gone, but I want him here. Carol, what can I do? And the truth of the matter is that, of course, you hate and love him. Of course, you want things to work. And yet, at the same time, you realize that can happen when you two are trying to work things out is that you overreact. Why? Because you don't feel safe. Why? Because you get triggered. Why? Because you expect more. I mean, this was a really hard week for many of you. Less than 7 days ago, it was Valentine's Day. And if you were one of the partners that got a card, you probably scrutinized that card and tried to make sense of it. If it was romantic, you thought, what the heck? How could he give me this card? We're not there yet. If it was general, you thought, oh my gosh, he could have given this to his mother. If he didn't get you a card, you felt hurt. If you went overboard, you felt like he was checking off the boxes. I get that you're not able to function in a way that you used to be able to function. And that makes so much sense to me. Because the truth of the matter is, your brain is still healing. And if you're one of the lucky ones that is listening to the show and you've got 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 years recovery, then good for you, because what that says to me is that you're still listening to things that you know can be helpful, and you're probably past the stage where you're in that fight, flight, or freeze. Regardless of where you're at, it is so important to have intentional self-care and support. You know, one thing I said to this woman whose husband's out, you know, out of the house. I said, get yourself support. You're going to a support group? Call every woman you can in that group and see if you can't set up some time to talk with them. You need to be able to talk about what's going on inside, because for many of you, you've kept it locked up for way too long. I don't know if that sounds like you, but I would suspect that, yes, you get the fact that, you know, you're just not the same person you used to be, and it's hard. It is absolutely hard to be that different person. And things can get better, but it's going to take a good amount of taking care of you. And what does that mean? That means that you pay attention to what you need. And despite the fact that you may not know what you need, think about basic needs. You know, do you need more sleep? Do you need more friends? Do you need what we call better, healthier, happier activities to participate in? Do you need to get away from this stuff for a while? You know, I really just want to know, what is it that you think that you might need that will make a difference in your life? And boy, I get in so many ways that even that can be frustrating. And I'm wondering if you are able to think about your situation as if you were guiding a friend. Guiding a friend who was going through a crisis like this. What would you tell her? And whatever you would tell her, I'd like for you to tell yourself. And that's always an easier way to decide what is it that you need or want. Yeah, I get that this is hard, hard stuff. And yet, one thing I absolutely know to be true is that we can all get through this together as long as you are willing to take as good of care for yourself as you would instruct a best friend. Okay. So that's what I know. I know that we have to make this better for you. And that's what life's all about. You know, this show is sometimes directly related to what your needs are, right? And then sometimes it's directly related to information about your husband or the whoever the person is with the problematic compulsive sexual behavior. Because the truth of the matter is, it helps to understand them a bit too, doesn't it? Absolutely. And so, I'm going to be talking today to Drew B. And Drew B is a man who really believes in Christian intervention, and he wants to teach men how to be porn free. And so I invited him to come on the show because I thought it would be helpful for you in recognizing what it's like to be a porn addict and what it's like to be a porn addict in recovery, especially if you come from a Christian approach. And I know the show's going to be great, and so you might even ask your husband who struggles with porn to watch or listen to this show. He's going to be talking about sexual fantasies and how they evoke the brain and how you can interrupt that arousal template that's driven by fantasy. And so if it starts to get a little too triggering, take a break, go get a cup of coffee, or check out and then check back in, because it's going to be some good information for sure. And I really do believe that this is a man who's made it his mission to help Christian men work through their addiction and get the help that they deserve. Now, speaking of help, you know that I believe that you have to find healthy resources to get you through the shock, the dismay, the anger, the fear, when you first discover spouse has been cheating, has a porn addiction, has been unfaithful, has compromised all of his values. That is super important. And then, of course, that next phase is grieving. And some women that come into my office, they've been grieving for years, so they're like, I'm done with my grieving. And I'm like, okay, well, let's make sure it's structured so you get it all out. Now, the truth of the matter is grief, any kind of grief, is never all out. But oftentimes people make the decision to start really focusing in on their life again, and they feel better. They feel lighter. They feel happier. They concentrate on other things. You've heard me say it before. I will talk with a partner and I'll say, stop reading all those books. You've read 42 books on partner betrayal and sex addiction. Now read something fun. Why? Because I really believe that you need to feed the brain healthy, positive things. Does that make sense? I hope so. So I'm going to ask you, think about 10 things that you like to do for fun. 10 things that make you happy. And I sure wish you were in my office right now so you could let me know what those things are. Because it is super important to have that toolbox of not only recovery tools, but also things that will make you feel like you've got a life again. Now, if you're having trouble thinking about that, then go to my website, www.sexhelpwithcarolthecoach. And then take a look at that partner sensitive post-traumatic growth course. It's an online course. You buy it, you take it at any point. You know, it can take you 8 weeks to get done. It can take you 2 days to get done. 7 modules on what it takes to get healthy. You know, how does that energy shift from fear into gratitude? What are those 25 principles of post-traumatic growth that they actually researched and found were available once you started focusing on you? And so I'm going to ask you, you know, it will mean that you have to like yourself again. You can't fall back on, I must not be good enough or he wouldn't have done this to me. Instead, you have to say, this had nothing to do with me. This was about a compulsivity, an addiction that was bad, bad, bad from the start. And it affected me. It horrified me. It made me afraid. But it wasn't because of me. It wasn't because we weren't having enough sex. It wasn't because I wasn't pretty enough. It wasn't because I wasn't a good enough wife. I didn't cook enough. It had nothing to do with me. This was about him. This was about a compulsion that started probably way before me and continued to grow until he got caught. Now, a few addicts confess, and that's always a good thing. But by far, 95% of them, well, they get caught. And when they get caught, that's when the jig is up and you're finding out things that you would never have known in a million years, right? So post-traumatic growth, and I'm going to say this over and over again, means that you create a new identity for yourself that is all about having positive feelings for yourself, liking who you are, having some tools in your toolbox that you can always go back to feel good. You know, those toolbox might include prayer, meditation, yoga, kickboxing. That's always a good one. Just anything that really makes you feel energized and alive and strong. Maybe that toolbox is that you take an art class. You learn a new instrument. You travel. You commit to going out with your girlfriends once a month. You pet your puppy. You take a bath. You get the gist. I want you to be thinking about things for you. Now, really, this show is just like I'm your therapist and personal life coach helping you through a crisis and getting you to the other side so that you can live your best life. And I know it probably doesn't feel like you can live your best life, but I promise you, you absolutely can. And how you do that is by taking care of you. So, Sex Help with Carol the Coach, take a look at that course, okay? I really can't stress how important it is to take charge and take care of you. If you wait for him to take care of you, you may be dependent on that. And I'm tired of you being dependent, right? That is not good news. So that is what I'm talking about. Hopefully you get the gist of what we need to do. And if you have a little extra money, or if your husband is willing to do something super special for you, well, then I can't say enough about coming to Italy and spending some time with me. Here's a commercial that'll share what you need to do.
Hey, listeners, are you ready for a little healing and restoration after betrayal? Hi, I'm Carol the Coach, and we're leaving for Tuscany, Italy on July 25th through August 1st, and I would love for you to join us. There is no denying that I want you to find your post-traumatic growth, and one of the ways you can do that is by settling in and experiencing life on a different level. We're going to be staying in a beautiful traditional Italian farmhouse with 7 bedrooms located between Florence and Siena. The farmhouse has a pool on a 625-acre winery. The tour is your opportunity to regain your life and treat yourself to adventure, nurturance, and personal growth. And I will be providing morning workshops and a free coaching session just for you. So if you're ready to reclaim your life and live the life you deserve, go to Sex Help with Carol the Coach or Street View Adventure Travel and sign up. There are only 8 spots left, so treat yourself to an international experience of connection, reflection, laughter, and support with other women. And just know, I can't wait to meet you.
That's right. That's what it's all about. It's about adventure. It's about travel. It's about fun. So if you've got an open spot in July and you want to do something with me, then go to my website, Sex Help with Carol the Coach, and it'll take you right to that place where you can sign up for the trip. We've got 2 spots filled, and we got 7 to go. So we're looking for more partners who want to learn more about post-traumatic growth and be supported and I'm going to create some hope, strength, and recovery for them. So that's what I love. That's what I know you need. And that's what I'm so looking forward to doing. All right. While we're waiting for Drew to come on, I sure hope he remembers. I'm sure he will. I am super excited to be talking about, this is the month where a lot of the 12-step support groups are doing their charity. And, you know, SNON and SA are putting on marathons all across the country in April. And so if you haven't been to an SA group in a long time, but you love to run or to walk, this is a great opportunity for you to raise some money for this organization and help them to really be able to provide services to more people who are in crisis that need the help. So look up SNON and SA and find out about the Race for Recovery. They're available in many of your communities. Now, I was talking to you about the fact that you need to have fun, right? But I also want to ask you, how in the world might you be able to begin to concentrate on yourself when the brain doesn't feel like it's working so well? You know, trauma causes a lot of stress. And what we know to be true is that trauma is that situation in which the amygdala gets activated, you go into fight, flight, or freeze, or fawn, which is this new criteria that says if you're a real people pleaser, if you are prone to codependency, you know, we never put partners in that space, but if you're prone to codependency in general, not because you're a partner, but just because that's you, you may actually go into a specific style of behavior where you are looking for anything and anybody to help you get through this, and you are, unfortunately, figuring out, what can I do to win him back? What can I do to make him love me? And when you think, what can I do to make him love me, you are probably feeling bad about yourself, thinking if there was something different that you could do, then you might be able to win him back. And the truth of the matter is, if he has sex addiction, you can't win him back. He has to decide that he's willing to work through this, to do the hard stuff. And if I can be so bold, to win you back. That's what needs to happen. So I'm going to ask, you know, when you think about your life and you think about that response, are you more prone to fight? I had a woman that I was just talking to. She knocked the monitor off the desk and then she stomped on it because it didn't break. Well, that's the woman that was into the fight. I had another woman that said, I just was so activated. I grabbed my suitcase, I threw some clothes in, and I took off. I wanted to run away. I knew it was coming. I was watching billboards of airlines and thinking, I want to escape. So she wanted to walk away. And, you know, one of the things I truly believe is that when you're into escape mode, what happens? When you're into escape mode, then it's oftentimes important to take a breather to feel a little bit better. That's listening to yourself. I don't say leave the kids and run away, but I do say pay attention to what your body, your brain, your heart, and your soul is telling you, and then see if you can't make that happen. I hope that makes sense. Now, what then happens after you get done with some of those responses is that they channel through to the emotional center. And that emotional center usually is characterized by 7 different feelings: anger, sadness, loneliness, fear, happiness, shame, and guilt. And for some of you, you may be feeling like you did something wrong. Something wasn't right with you. And the last thing we want you to feel is that something wasn't right with you, because it isn't about you at all. So that anterior cingulate, that is the rejection center of the brain. And you know, there's no bigger rejection than this, right? None. So I want to ask you, after you've gotten through, what's your primary emotion? You know, how are you feeling today? What is your primary emotion today? Because again, you may have 2 days of crisis. You may have, it may be 2 months. It may be, let's see here, it may be a year. You know, I say it takes the brain literally 3 to 5 years to recover. And so what I want you to know is that you're not going to get over this at all until you take care of you. And unfortunately, it is not going to be in your time frame. It's going to be however long it takes your heart and your brain to get better. Does that make sense? That you're not necessarily going to know? I hope so. All right. Looks like Drew is on the phone. He's in.
Hello,
the
Carol.
Hello, Drew. I'm glad you're in the house with me today.
Me too. I made it on.
Very good. And I just sent you the number in case you couldn't. So I'm glad that you figured it out. Appreciate it. And I really wanted our listening audience to hear your take on why you would advocate for Christian men to abstain from porn and to actually recover. I mean, that has been your mission, has it not, that you're helping Christian men recover from their porn addiction?
Yes, absolutely. And that's my passion. That's what I care about so much. And it really comes from my own story of struggling with pornography and self-hatred and being really confused and constricted by my sexual behavior.
Well, okay. Would you mind sharing a little bit of your story with my listening audience?
Yeah, for sure. So when I was a kid, I was not a Christian, actually. And when I became a Christian in high school, I decided, well, you know, maybe the masturbation and the pornography, that's a normal part of my daily routine, maybe I should try to stop. And when I did, when I tried, I couldn't. And this was alarming to me. I began to wonder, is there something wrong with me? Do I have a sexual addiction? And I tried all kinds of solutions to fix myself, to fix my behavior. And I did get some success with some spiritual solutions, with getting into recovery groups, finding some people I could talk about it with. But nothing really clicked until I began to understand what my sexual fantasies were all about. So sexual fetishes, power and domination, and even some exhibitionism was a part of what I found sexually arousing. And I didn't like that about myself. I thought, why do I like what I like sexually, and why are all these things feeling like they have a magnetic pull? And when I, through the help of some expert guidance and through my own healing journey, ever since 2014, I've been free from pornography, free from the shame, and been able to develop self-compassion so that I don't just get triggered by a fantasy, but I see the little boy who needs love on the other side, and I'm able to connect with him.
Well, absolutely. And so you said that for you, it wasn't until you understood what part fantasy played in that compulsion,
right,
that you could then better surrender to the things you needed to do to be porn free. So tell us a little bit about that concept of fantasy.
Yeah, so we all have fantasies, desires, dreams, things that are exciting to us, things that we dream about. And sexually, we all have what Patrick Carnes called an arousal template, a collection, a cocktail, if you will, a mixture of sights, sounds, smells that are stimulating to not just our bodies, but to a very deep part within us that's drawn to them. And this is different for each one of us. We each have a unique set of things that we find attractive, either in a sexual experience or even just in a relationship. You know, there are certain people who have a magnetic pull on us and we feel drawn to them. And so if you find yourself drawn to unhealthy behaviors or bizarre or confusing sexual experiences, there's always a reason for that. And part of what I do with Christian men is we go into interpreting those fantasies and seeing the stories behind them.
Okay, and so that's how you help Christian men to begin to understand, if you will, the triggers that create the sexually addictive behavior, and that's all based on arousal template. Does that arousal template ever change? Does it ever change as a man progresses in his sex addiction?
Yes, it does change. If your addiction continues, it will escalate, and some of the things that used to be arousing will no longer hold the same appeal, and you'll require more extreme forms of stimulation. So this is where it can get really ugly, and we can continue to escalate in our behavior and in what we need to get that same sense of a high. I mean, ultimately, the reason why I target Christian men specifically is because, statistically speaking, the group of people who uses pornography the most in this country is religious conservative men with repressed sexuality, feeling like we have to shut it down and we can't express it in a healthy way, and yet feeling like because of our religious beliefs, we also have all these boundaries and constrictions. Coming from rigid, disengaged family backgrounds, it's a recipe for this kind of thing. And so we tend to find ourselves going into a secret sex life that provides a solution to some of the deeper problems that we face. So one of my favorite quotes is from Charles Spurgeon, who said, "The half-committed Christian is the most miserable person on earth. He's just enough into God to be miserable in the world. He's just enough in the world to be miserable in God." And this is who I was, and this is who I help, is the guys who feel miserable. Because on the one hand, they have these spiritual and religious beliefs and convictions, and on the other hand, they have this sexual behavior and even an addiction that they can't seem to get past.
Well, and I think that's what is so perplexing to the wives, to the partners. You know, it's like, wait a minute, you were living a Christian life. You did share Christian values. We were praying and being deacons or elders in the church. And then there was this whole secret life. So can you help a wife, a partner, understand how this man can live such a dual life?
Yes, absolutely. Well, first of all, I'm sure you talk a lot about on this show, it's never the fault of the partner. That's not what it's about. It's not about you. It's not about, you know, if you only satisfied his needs a little bit more, or if you were better at this or more emotionally safe for him. That's not the core of what's driving this problem in his life. It really goes back to something that I have turned into a phrase, that porn or sexual addiction is ultimately not a problem per se. It's actually the solution to a deeper problem. And it's the solution that we have been using, many of us, since we were little boys. It's our pacifier. Pornography is a pacifier for the wounds and the stress that we experience. And the problem is not necessarily just our behavior. It's the way we do life. It's the way we cope with difficulties. And it ultimately has roots in childhood experiences that we may or may not be aware of. So here's one example. I have a client right now who is just beginning to understand where his fantasies come from and how pornography has been used as his pacifier, and how he has this spiritual life on the one side and his sexual life, which seems completely different. So he is the son of a pastor. He's a pastor's kid. And he grew up, he didn't realize this, but he grew up feeling like he always had to look good or be good. And there was no space for him to express the parts of himself that were not always morally acceptable and were not always the prim and proper pastor's kid. So he was very drawn to what he would call naughty porn, images and videos that revolve around people breaking the rules or crossing boundaries, maybe with the girl next door or between a teacher and student, these kind of naughty experiences. And what he discovered was pornography was the one place in his life where he didn't have to be good all the time, where he didn't have to be the perfect pastor's kid. And he could have this place where there was no stress, there was no pressure, there was just the thrill and excitement of not having to be perfect all the time. And so being able to understand that was the problem and that pornography was really just a pacifier has enabled him to see the stories behind those videos and images, why they're so appealing to him, and then to seek a deeper solution because of it.
And so you helped him to look at his own childhood and to find reasons that were linked to what he was looking at. And if I understand you, Drew, what you're really saying is that the sexual addiction was maybe even more arousing because, as you called it, it had to do with naughty porn. It had to do with him wanting a different identity, per se, than the one that was given to him by virtue of being a pastor's kid.
Totally. There's so much freedom in just being able to name that.
So that really requires that our men, our sex addicts, do the hard work of family of origin history taking and really explore that to see if there's more to this than what meets the eye.
Yes. I mean, it's so common for people to go through recovery programs, counseling, therapy, and yet they never look into the details of what's sexually arousing to them. Whereas those details often hold the key to what's really at the core. So for me, for example, in my own history of sexual addiction, power and domination was always something that characterized my fantasies, the things that would turn me on. So either I would be the one in charge of the experience and the person was submissive and going along with it, or the other person was resisting it and didn't like it. And that was exciting to me. And I did not like this about myself, but that's what I was drawn to. And so one of the ways that this happened for me is I had to go back and ask, okay, when have I felt this way before? When have I felt powerful before? And when have I felt the exact opposite? When have I felt powerless? Maybe this is a reversal of a time when I felt powerless. And that took me back to when I was 13 years old and I felt completely powerless. And so the adult mature version of me is not drawn to pornography or at risk of sexually addictive behaviors. But the 13-year-old boy still shows up every once in a while. And he's the one who keeps coming back to these old patterns.
And
does that make sense?
For you, yeah, it totally makes sense. So what do you do? What are some tools and tips based on your own fantasy and your own arousal template and your own family of origin issue? What are some tools and tips that you use to combat this compulsion?
Yes. Well, one resource that I'd like to point people to is called the Sexual Fantasy Framework. And this is a free video series I did with my friend who's a psychotherapist named Jay Stringer. And you can get that at my website, husbandmaterial.com/fantasy. And we go into how to face your sexual fantasies, see the stories behind them, and then love yourself in the middle of them and stop living in the past. So that's a great tool. And ultimately what it's doing is helping you ask those questions. Okay, whatever it is, whatever the specific thing is, you know, we've talked about naughty porn or power and domination. Maybe it's a sexual fetish of some kind. Beginning to trace back, okay, when have I seen this before? Or maybe not a repetition, but a reversal. Okay, when have I seen the opposite of this? And maybe the fantasy is providing a reversal of something painful that I experienced. And so this video series can certainly help you do that. I think another great tip is, you know, when we're in recovery, usually a lot of people are trying to shut down their fantasies, you know, avoid it or overpower it. Whereas rather than taking that posture of control, what I would really recommend more is a posture of curiosity, of asking, okay, this fantasy is not random. I wonder what it's really about. There is a reason behind it. It does make sense. So what makes this make sense? Trying to connect the dots, put the puzzle pieces together. And that posture of curiosity can be so amazing when you come rather than with control, with curiosity, and in the end, compassion for the little boy or the little girl who you'll find on the other side.
Well, absolutely. And so one more time, tell us your website. Where can these men take this assessment, so to speak, see this video course and do the self-assessment?
Yeah, it's totally free. It's at husbandmaterial.com/fantasy. And Husband Material is my ministry. We're coming out with videos twice a week, all on this topic of freedom from pornography.
And so let me ask you, you said you and your friend Jay Stringer.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the Jay Stringer? Did he write a book?
Yes, he wrote the book Unwanted, How Sexual Brokenness Reveals Our Way to Healing.
I know it. You're in some good company. That is an amazing book. So many people, that's a game changer in them understanding their brokenness.
Yes, absolutely. And it's my favorite book on this topic. And it's been really cool to forge this partnership with Jay. And his book is the one that I use with all of my clients. And if you haven't read it, it really is a game changer. And it takes some of that research from Patrick Carnes, Mark Laser, Dr. Ted Roberts, and puts it in a way that more people can understand and resonate with.
Well, and other than Dr. Patrick Carnes, you're really referencing strong Christian pastors, theologians. I mean, they're people that have made their ministry on helping men with pornography, infidelity,
yes,
unfaithfulness, openness, brokenness, and humility, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, as we begin to wrap up the show, I'd like for you to share with our listening audience, because, you know, I know that you, originally we were scheduled to do this with men, and we're still going to do that if we can figure out how, but I said, you know,
awesome,
partners that I work with are always trying to understand their husbands, and then, more than that, they want to help guide and support them. And so I thought this would be a good opportunity for them to hear some things that maybe they haven't heard about arousal templates and fantasies.
Mm-hmm.
What else might you share with them? Yeah.
The book Unwanted is a great place to really go deep into how your early experiences and your family show up in your sexual desires and behavior. Also, my book, Redeemed Sexuality, is a workbook for groups, which is really designed more for younger people, but it's getting at the idea that our sexuality is a good, beautiful, and broken thing, which can be redeemed. And not just stopping at trying to avoid the triggers or the temptations, but actually pursuing healthy relationships and healthy intimacy, which is so healing. I think another great ministry out there for people, both for those who are actively struggling sexually and with those who have been betrayed, is Pure Desire Ministries. And they have some awesome resources, and they have some online groups as well for people to get plugged into.
And so those are great, great resources. And the book that you wrote, one more time, repeat the name of it.
Yeah, it's called Redeemed Sexuality, 12 Sessions for Healing and Transformation in Community.
All right, and you said it's written for younger men. So what age group were you shooting for?
It could actually be for younger men or younger women. So just like the book Unwanted, it can be used by both. And that is, I would say, for people between 18 and 30 years old, especially for single folks. You know, a lot of recovery material out there is for married people, and not a lot speaks to the single experience. So that's one of the things that Redeemed Sexuality does well.
Well, excellent. And do you think that you would be doing this ministry if you hadn't have had the problem yourself?
I would not be doing it. That problem that I've experienced was so difficult for me and so formative that it gave me the compassion and the energy necessary to do this hard work. I mean, Carol, you know how hard it is to go into the front lines and go into the trenches and engage in the difficulties of this work of helping people in sexual bondage and sexual betrayal heal. And I really, really didn't want to be the sex guy. And And yet, this seems to be the most meaningful work I can pursue in life. And everything that I share with others really comes from my own story and my own experience of healing, because I believe you really can't take people where you haven't been yet.
Well, I would 100% agree with you. Now, I want to ask you, do you find any resistance in the church?
Yeah, there's a lot. There is a lot of resistance, and part of that is because pastors in particular and ministry leaders are slow and reluctant to address these issues. A lot of times it's because they have issues in their own lives and they don't want to be exposed. Other times it's because they're concerned about other people's behavior being exposed. There are stories all the time about people losing their jobs or churches becoming divided or crumpling under the stress and the pressure of sexual affairs or problems with pornography that come to light publicly. So the church really has a long way to go. And we are a work in progress. In some ways, I feel like it's even harder for people in church to deal with these things because there's so much silence and stigma and shame around them.
Well, absolutely. It's that dual life again, and they feel like people
yeah.
will never be able to trust them ever
yeah.
again if they reveal the problems that they've faced and also the secrets that they've held. But you and I both know that it's being able to find safe people to be open with and to share these secrets
mm-hmm.
that it starts the journey of recovery. So
mm-hmm.
we've got to get this in the churches, because truly, oftentimes it's the church that is on the front lines of this problem.
Yeah. Yeah. The one thing that I think a lot of churches are doing well is still holding on to some strong moral convictions and taking a stand on sexual issues. I think what we need more of is the grace and love to support people rather than shoot our wounded.
Okay, say a little bit more about that. You mean not shame them, but treat them with compassion
yeah.
and direct them?
Yeah, only 7% of churches have some kind of program, a recovery program, that's sexually focused. And we will talk about it sometimes in sermon series, but we're really not doing very much to create those safe places where people can come in a group or in some kind of one-on-one counseling or coaching. It's hard to find a church where you are allowed to be broken and given a process to begin to heal.
Yes, I absolutely agree with that, Drew. And, you know, we find this organization is APSATS, and they are a partner-sensitive trauma organization, but they also treat sex addicts with compassion and care and love. And we oftentimes find that therapists that don't know anything about sex addiction and churches that don't necessarily want to deal with sex addiction,
mm-hmm.
they actually create trauma-induced treatment or pastoral-induced trauma. And so we don't want our helpers to be perpetrators to make greater shame and greater guilt.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
absolutely.
So, yeah,
and there's a great training that I went through called Pastoral Sex Addiction Professional. It's done by ITAP, and
mm-hmm.
they're the same people who certify CSATs, Certified Sex Addiction Therapists, and they are addressing this problem and beginning to train pastors and other ministry leaders on what to do when infidelity or sexual addiction comes into the open or comes into your office in your church.
Oh, I absolutely understand that. Our president of APSATS has gone through that program and is working directly
awesome.
With the churches also. So she is a PSAT. And
cool.
I'm sure you've read Facing the Shadows, and then probably you've read the book Shadows of the Cross. Have you not?
Yes. Yeah, that's right, with Craig Cashwell, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was one of our professors in PSAP.
Oh, he was. That's cool. Well, thank you so much for enlightening us. And one more time, remind our listeners how they can get a hold of you and what website they need to find you on.
Yeah, you can find my organization at husbandmaterial.com. And that specific training on the sexual fantasy framework is at husbandmaterial.com/fantasy. And if you want to get in touch with me personally, you can go to drewboa.com. And thanks so much for having me on the show, Carol.
Well, you're welcome. I just have to comment. Husband material. That sounds like you are making a statement that that is your goal in life, to be good husband material.
That is certainly a high priority on becoming the kind of man who can be trusted, who is healthy, and who is able to be a faithful father and the kind of man that a woman can feel good about marrying.
Oh, I love that. All right. Well, we'll keep in touch and appreciate you coming on the show. You make it a great day.
Okay. Thanks, Carol. Bye, everyone.
Bye. So as you can see, he's very committed to helping Christian men work through their fantasies, their temporal arousal template, and really changing their behaviors from the inside out. And I always think it's interesting to interview sex addicts. I really do. You know, part of that partner-sensitive trauma course that I've done on post-traumatic growth, I did interview a partner and her husband, and they're both doing great work in the UK. And the sex addict that I interviewed exemplified post-traumatic growth because he found his purpose and his passion, and he's changing the lives of men, women, and couples. So we need to move into that. Don't forget your post-traumatic growth. And, hey, I will see you next week for more Betrayal Recovery Radio. As I say at the end of every show, there'll only be one of you. Fearlessly have the courage to be yourself.
For more information, go to APSATS.org, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, to find a professional in your area who is trained to help you after sexual betrayal.